When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 3, The Burrow.
Treasures.
Yeah.
You change it up a little bit there?
I did. Actually, yeah, I changed it up last time. I don't know if you caught it then, but I did. Yeah, because I was like, otherwise, I was saying secrets for Philosopher's Stone, but then I'm like saying it twice, and it just sounded weird.
Okay, now I feel so silly if I also recognized it in the last one. If I didn't realize you did it in the last one, I almost kind of love that.
Oh.
But if I've now caught you twice doing it, that would also be mildly embarrassing.
It's yeah.
Like, ha! Look, you changed the thing. It's like, yeah, we've covered this.
The question will be, if in Prisoner of Azkaban, if I go back to secrets, or if I stick with treasures, or if it's like maybe this is a word I change per book or something.
Oh, I kind of love that. I love that. That could be something kind of like fun and exciting to look forward to.
I know. The intro change.
The intro change. What are they going to do next?
What?
That being said, though, Jay, I am so very excited for Chapter 3, The Burrow of Chamber of Secrets. I think that this is a just truly delightful chapter of Harry Potter, where we get to see the first ever, the collection of Harry from Number 4 Privet Drive via the turquoise flying Ford Anglia vehicle,
yep,
a la Arthur Weasley. We get some Fred and George action in there. Harry gets to go to the Burrow for the very first time. We get more time with Molly. We get more time with Arthur.
Well, it's the first time we see Arthur.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, that's true. So, which is a pretty neat. I've got some notes about the intro with Arthur that we'll get to.
I love so many things about this chapter. It's like, I also feel like the whole chapter feels like it is a direct almost comparison between like Molly and Petunia. Like,
yes.
It's like the life at the Burrow could not be more the exact opposite than life at Number 4 Privet Drive.
Which, by the way, like one of the things that I was like noticing is that Harry's delivery, and this is jumping ahead just a tiny bit, but his delivery to the Burrow happens directly at sunrise.
Oh yeah.
Whereas his delivery to Number 4 Privet Drive happens at midnight.
Oh, you're right.
Which I think is kind of like a neat, like I think that's an intentional contrast between those two moments, because like sunrise, I think night represents darkness, which is like the antithesis of Harry's whole objective,
yeah,
which is, you know, driven by like light and positivity.
Yeah.
And so to me, the fact that like the sun is like just starting to come over the horizon as he's like arriving at the Burrow, like
right,
neatly tying together.
It's like the long night is over.
Yes,
a little bit,
yes,
you know.
Yeah,
like yep, you've been delivered from your parents' wreckage, 10 years of dark night, and now boom, the sun is rising as you arrive at the Weasleys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. The red sun as you
the
arrive
red sun.
At the Weasleys. Oh my gosh, the red sun. Oh man, it's almost one of those things where like if Harry like is the red sun to the Weasleys, like the family full of children.
Yeah.
Cuz you know, it's like he doesn't have the red hair, but if he's like the red sun,
he's the black sun, you know.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, the super jet black hair.
Yeah, that reminds. That's like because like Red Moon is like the ship name for Ron and Luna.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes. So
who would be the red sun? What's that ship? That's got to be Ron and someone else.
Probably
someone's name's got to mean sun.
Certainly
somewhere in there.
Who is the sunniest character we've got?
Yeah,
Colin Creevy.
Boy, that's a ship you don't see often.
Yeah, that's not the most common one.
Nope.
But anyway, yeah. No, so I'm excited to talk about this chapter. I think there's a lot of like really good stuff packed in here. Without any further ado, what do you think about the chapter art for Chapter 3, The Burrow?
Dude, I actually really like it in contrast to Dobby at the last chapter.
Yes.
Where I thought it was terrible. Like, a lot of times, I don't love the depiction of the car. I feel like they in Chamber of Secrets and a lot of like the cover art, I feel like they lean on the car in a lot of things. And like it's a good thing Not on this one. Maybe it is on the cover of ours.
I was trying to see if it was on the cover of ours. I don't think it is.
No. But I know it shows up a bunch, and it's like, I think they do that because it's a great way to be like, look at this magical thing. This is behaving in a way it's not. Like, you clearly still know it's like a magical thing, but it also doesn't like spoil anything. Like, you don't see the basilisk. Like, you can't put the basilisk on the cover.
That's true.
And, you know, so, well, I don't know. The one we had as kids had the sword on it. I guess you sort of knew he was going to get a sword maybe.
Oh, that's true.
If you paid attention close enough. This one, I guess the one we're looking at, our cover right now, I don't know if we've talked about it since we've started doing Chamber of Secrets, but it's the same style. It's like this sort of like pencil, really nice artwork, and it's got lots of like Easter eggs in it. So you can see like the spiders and Dobby and Draco, and I guess there is a snake.
There is a snake, but it seems like the snake could just as easily
could just
be Slytherin.
Yeah. Like you wouldn't look at that and be like, oh, the monster's a snake. You'd just be like, oh, it's the Chamber of Secrets, which is about Slytherin, so that's why there's a snake.
Right. And in this lower left corner, I think we've got is that Tom Riddle?
I think it is. Oh, you're absolutely right. It is Tom Riddle. Of course, you'd have no way of knowing.
No, that would be the Draco on the front cover here looks a little deranged. He's kind of like a little bit of a bulging eye going on.
I guess
there.
Is that also supposed to be Ginny holding the book?
I think it's supposed to be Ginny holding
so.
The book.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, right.
people can't see this. This is a great podcast talk.
I know. Yeah. Let's describe an image for you. No, but going back to our chapter art, just to continue to do this exact same thing, I do like the image here. One of the things I do always find interesting is that it's like I in my head have just made the car blue because of like the films.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other depictions. But so the turquoise does always throw me off. Like I can never imagine what it would look like if they flew up in like a purple car.
Well, turquoise is like a blue green.
Is turquoise a blue green?
Yeah.
Do I think I've done this before. I don't even think this is the first time I've. Oh my gosh. I'm like, here I am having a point about something.
Yeah, like,
and
oh,
I've
it's
just
supposed
got
to be purple?
Yeah, wow. Oh my gosh. I'm just an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the movie they get it pretty close to right.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe you're right. Okay. So anyway, scratch all of that. Apparently, part of my brain wants to picture the car as purple.
As purple, yeah. That's so funny that, like, your whole life you've been like, I don't know why they made it blue. Like, it says turquoise. It's purple.
It's purple.
Come on.
Yeah, I don't know what word am I even thinking of that would be adjacent
to turquoise.
I know, like,
what purple color starts with a T?
There might be a very light shade of purple on my face right now due to the sheer embarrassment pouring out of me.
that's such like a glass shattering. Where you're like, what?
Dang it.
Just this weird gap in knowledge.
I know. That's so silly. And it's like, I don't even think, I mean, yeah, like, I don't know. I now just feel like a, anyway, it doesn't matter.
All
so
right, let's move right ahead on.
Yeah, let's just dive on in. So we did end chapter 2 with one of my all-time faves. It's the cliffhanger of Harry waking up to see the face of Ron Weasley looking at him through his barred windows at the Dursleys.
Yes. What they are there to do is to come rescue Harry from the house. Ron, I love that Ron's first thing is like, I've asked you about 12 times to stay. And I'm like, what dedication? The number of letters he sent.
I know. It truly is, though. It's like one of these things where he's like, I know Harry wanted to come and see me this summer.
Right.
I'm mailing another letter. That's it. I'm just
like,
going to
keep going. What must this have felt like from Ron's point of view? Like Harry's sitting there concerned that like people aren't sending him letters, but they are. So from Ron's point of view, he must be like, well, Harry didn't really like me very much.
Dude,
I've sent him like 12 letters. This is the what? What is going on? Oh God.
Think about this though, literally, because you'd also have Ginny who's been like gushing over Harry like all summer break.
Yeah.
And so from Ron's perspective, he's coming home being like, yeah, remember that Harry guy we met on the platform? He's like, that's Harry Potter and he is my best friend.
Yeah.
And then Ginny's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. Like, I'm going to school this year. I'm going to meet Harry Potter. I can't wait to meet Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And Ron's over there like, yeah, well, I don't know if we're going to, I don't know if you actually liked me.
I know,
like,
gosh.
You know, like that would be so tough.
I thought we did the chess match together. We had like, chess match. We had a moment, I thought, but
I know, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
Right. When we won all those points, you know, house cup.
I
like,
know, man. Hermione?
It seemed like we were pretty tight. I wonder if he's writing Hermione.
I know. But I guess part of his rationale is that he doesn't think his owl, Errol, is maybe making the trip, although Errol missing the trip 12 times would be kind of like, dude, get another owl.
Yeah, at that point in time, which they did get Hermes for Percy, which is like one of those, I just highlighted it as like a trivia fun fact, simply just because it's like, like, if you were to ask me off the cuff, what is the name of Percy's owl? I don't know if I could always pull it off.
Hermes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a tricky one. That's a tricky one. They also, Ron also knows that Harry got the official warning for using magic in front of muggles, which I think this is interesting that, you know, Harry, or he says, how did he know? And he says, he works for the ministry. It's like, to me, it's like, how on earth did it not come up in the entire first year what Ron's dad does?
Oh, that, or the fact, you know, that Harry gets into his bedroom at the end of this chapter where the walls are plastered with Chudley Cannons posters.
Yeah.
And it never, like, Harry made the Quidditch team in the most remarkable fashion, and it never came up who Ron's favorite team was.
Oh, I know.
He, like, didn't bring a poster to school with him.
I know. Like, even Dean Thomas has a picture of, like, you know, soccer players.
Right.
Up in there. Ron has covered every inch of his room in Chudley Cannon stuff and doesn't, like, bring a poster. Like, he must love them.
I know. Yeah,
what else is interesting is that the Weasleys have a radio in here, and it is curious to me that, like, it's almost curious to me that Ron doesn't have a radio at school, or none of the boys have a radio listen to Quidditch.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That is so surprising.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what that's about at all. But
yeah.
So either way, it's like, apparently Harry and Ron are spending way too much time trying to figure out, like, who Nicholas Flamel is, and, like, oh, Hagrid's got a dragon.
Yeah. Right.
In order to be like, hey, what are your general interests?
Yeah.
Tell me about your direct family.
Right. But I think there even is a time where, like, Ron goes off trying to explain the complicated rules of Quidditch or something, and it seems like maybe you could have brought up the Chudley Cannons.
Yeah,
then
it seems like it.
Yeah.
But speaking of, you should talk. There is the really hilarious circumstances under which Harry is in trouble for not even actually doing magic inside of his own home, and Ron is saying to him, "You know, we're not supposed to do spells outside of school." To which Harry says, "You should talk."
I know, right?
staring at the floating car. This is like one of those things where it's like, it's again baffling to me that the trace is just so utterly absurd.
It is so, like, absurd.
The enchanted vehicle doesn't count as magic, but someone else performing magic in a house that Harry is known to be in has gotten him, like marked.
Oh, I know. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, yeah, Ron says, oh, this doesn't count. It's like, but why not? Because, like, it there's this weird loophole where, like, if you use a magical object, like, you're not doing magic. You're just holding something that's magical. So, like, that doesn't register. But it's like, why is that different? You know?
Right. Yes. Like, it's weird because it's almost like they can detect the ignition point of a magical spell being created, but not the presence of magic. Hard stop.
Right.
Otherwise,
like could Ron, like, click the, yeah, like Ron could, like, click the deluminate. Like, if Ron as 12-year-old here clicks the deluminator, like, that would do something magical. Like, it would be a device that he could pull the light out of.
Right.
Right. Like, that would be, that's like the same as casting a spell.
So for all intents and purposes,
not that there's a spell that can do that.
Right. But so all intents and purposes, though, it means he could fly his broomstick with no issues.
Right. Broomsticks, not a problem.
Yeah, he could do that. He also could
use I have more to say about broomsticks in this chapter.
Okay. Yeah. But he could also use his invisibility cloak at home.
Right. Yes. Know? He could, like, use the invisibility cloak.
I feel like he could just screw with Dudley.
I know. Yeah. Why is it? Oh my God, you're right. Why is Harry not using the cloak at home? I guess it's all, like, locked away, but, like, of all the things you, like, want to, like, tuck away right away.
Oh, I know. But actually, speaking of being locked away, this is one of those, like, I think it's a really cute nod to Arthur Weasley that they come in, and of course, Fred and George and Ron are stuck with the same issue, which is that they also can't do magic during part of this rescue mission.
Right.
But I love it. The line comes from Fred, who says it's to go and pick the lock with a hairpin. He says a lot of wizards think it's a waste of time knowing this sort of muggle trick, but they feel, but we feel like their skills worth learning, even if they are a bit slow. This is funny to me because I feel like this is Fred and George basically being like, yes, there is benefit to muggle ways of doing things.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's like an homage to their dad.
Even though they're, like, sort of making fun of him in this chapter a little bit.
Right. Yeah. It's like he loves muggle stuff. It's like we do too. We learn muggle tricks.
I know. And actually, there's a really fun little just, like, thing about the fact that they open the door with, like, a hairpin, because next year Harry does the same thing to open his trunk. So, like, he does, like, listen to Fred here. Like Fred says, it's a skill worth learning, and, like, so Harry does.
Yeah, oh yeah,
like,
that's
Harry
true.
Does
yeah,
do it.
Like, he takes it.
Which is kind of fun. And then the Weasleys continue to do this later on when they open the shop. They have, like muggle card tricks.
Right.
You know?
Yes,
like,
they do.
There is, like, a little muggleness. Yeah, I think you're right. It is, like, all sort of an homage to their dad.
Yes.
A little bit. I also love when they're walking down the stairs when Harry says, watch out for the bottom stair. It creaks, as if they haven't already ripped a window off the house. But it's like, yeah. No, That bottom stair, that's what's going to get you caught.
Right,
you know?
Squeaky stair, I know. But that is such like kid thinking where it's like, as a kid, you're feeling that like if you were to like sneak down to the kitchen in the middle of the night to get like a snack or something,
yeah.
The squeaky floorboard does feel like your like maximum.
Yeah, opponent. That's like, yeah. Oh, but I do this sometimes. Like, if I go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and I'm like, do I flush or not? Like if I flush it, it could wake somebody up.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yes.
And, but then like in the morning, like if I have to go wake Luke up for school, I could be in his room being like, Luke, time to get up. Like physically shaking him. And he's like dead asleep. Yeah, not doing it. Yeah. The toilet's not going to do it.
No, I know. But I have the exact same issue because my bathroom is on the exact, it shares a wall with my daughter's. Addison's bedroom. So
oh,
it's
man.
Like, yeah, it's like, this is way too
That's
close.
A little closer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah indeed. So mm-hmm. anyway, bathroom conversation aside.
Yeah.
No, the other thing that I really like though about Fred and George here is just their overall like willingness to help. Like they are so in their element throughout
really
this entire
are.
Scene.
Yeah.
Like they pull up and it's just like, all right, Harry, ask George. Like just basically like as if you didn't just pull up in the middle of the night in a flying car.
Right. Yeah.
As
totally
if
normal.
Completely
whatever.
Ordinary situation.
Yeah. I mean, they stealthily get in, pick two locks, and get all of Harry's stuff up the stairs, making no noise.
Yes, yes, right. Exactly. So it's like, I feel like this is another one of those instances. And I do love that this is included in the story overall, because I think that there are tons of kids who go to school that don't thrive in an academic environment, but it is not because they are not smart.
Right.
It's just like, they just need to direct their energies towards something that like makes sense to them.
I know, that is such a constant theme with Fred and George.
Yes.
Like, I think even in the first book, it says, Ron says like, Fred and George goof around a bit, but they still get really good marks. And it's like, eventually that's not true. They just sort of goof around. But there's like, I think when they're doing like the headless hats or something, or maybe it's the vomiting or something.
I think it's the headless hats. And, yeah. And Hermione is even like, wow, that's an impressive piece of magic.
Oh no, we're thinking of different things then.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think they've perfected one of the skiving snack box things.
Okay.
And like Fred's, you know, vomiting into a bucket and then they're like managing it and taking the other side and be like, I'm fine. Or whatever.
Okay.
And Hermione's like, there's no real use to that. And Ron's looking over, is like, no use. They've got 26 galleons already.
Right. Yes. Like, yeah. That's true. That's true. Yeah. That's a prime example of where your priorities are in massively different places.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like they're doing it. And then obviously Weasley, Wizard Weezes is like the only shop thriving in the middle of the second Wizarding War.
Right. 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 Yeah. Just like, everybody needs a laugh.
Everyone
right
needs
now.
A laugh. You know, poo.
They'll be murdered in their beds.
Oh my god, what an absolutely great one. Let's see, there's also Fred and George pick the lock with the hairpin, where then when they get in, well actually first of all I should mention that as Harry's getting in, after he clears out his entire room, apparently what he forgot was Hedwig.
I know,
like, I literally wrote next to it like, excuse me,
I literally wrote next to it in all caps, how?
I know. Like they're like, get her out, like get all my wizard stuff from under the stairs, I'll get all my stuff in my room. All of your stuff is basically all your wizard stuff, Harry. So like, what did you grab?
Right.
Like,
right.
What did you put in there? And you forgot your like only friend in the house. Like, are you kidding me?
This is every time I leave a hotel room ever. And I'm like looking under the bed. I'm like, you know,
yeah.
Surveying the entire space in front of me. Like, okay, I am not looking at any left like electronics or socks or, you know, this, that, or the others. And the thing I always end up leaving is like face wash in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, you know, you'll open the bathroom door and you poke your head and you're like, okay, like, so what am I missing? No, I'm all good. But you left it like inside of the shower door.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem.
Well, Hedwig, I think is pretty obvious in that room.
Yeah. A completely otherwise empty room, you know, nothing going on. You got a caged bird. You forgot.
I know, a giant caged bird in there, but I guess that's what wakes up Uncle Vernon. So you can have a little bit of suspense as Harry escapes. There's also a line here where they're hanging outside of the window where Harry's like, they've locked me up. Tell them at Hogwarts I want to come back. And it's like, Harry, like, I love that there's like this part of Harry's brain where like he doesn't realize they're there to like take him away.
Right, right, yeah. Right. It's like,
like they're gonna show up and be like, hey, see ya.
Best case scenario, I got to send a message with those guys who arrived in the flying car. Like,
no, you're coming with us right now.
Right now, yeah.
It's I think it just speaks like how helpless Harry feels at Privet Drive at that moment, that he doesn't even think like rescue is possible.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
Oh, so actually when they get in the car though, they hand Hedwig's cage to Ron and he also unlocks it with the hairpin. So like, even though Fred and George are like, we think their skill is worth learning, like Ron can also already do it.
Is that right?
Yeah, George handed the hairpin to Ron, and a moment later, Hedwig soared joyfully out of the window to glide along them like a ghost.
You're totally right.
Yep.
You were totally right. How about that? That was like one of those things that I must have just like glazed right over, because I was like, no, I'm pretty sure George did it. And I was like, no, it says it right there. Okay, yeah, so Ron is also able to do the hairpin trick, which is pretty cool, given some creds to Ron there, who so infrequently seems to have any credits.
I know, like all the skills.
You have to be good at chess in book one, okay? Like, that's achievement enough for Ron again.
Done.
Right. Maybe eventually he'll be like reasonably good at Quidditch when he's under the placebo effect of drugs.
Of drugs, exactly. Then there's, so Harry starts telling them about Dobby and the fiasco with the pudding. And they're all sort of, let's see. George says, so he wouldn't even tell you who's supposed to be plotting all this stuff. And Harry says, I don't think he could. And like, that to me is such an interesting line, because it's like the line between what Dobby can and can't do, like, seems very blurry.
It definitely does.
Like,
yeah.
I don't think he could, like, you couldn't tell him who's going to do it, but you can leave the Malfoys and come give him some version of a warning. Like, why can you go this far but not that far?
I think it again kind of goes like to what we I think last chapter we compared it a little bit to like Creature when Sirius Black like yells at him to like get out.
Yeah.
And like Creature is able to be like, okay.
Yeah.
And it's like, by getting out, you basically gave him permission to like leave premises. So that it's like, all I can imagine in my head is that has got to be what is going on with Dobby, is that he has found like some loophole where like one of the Malfoys said something that was like close enough.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like when it comes to like this like relationship with the house elves, it's like if they so desire to defy you, it's all a matter of like finding the split hairs.
Yeah.
Which I suspect if they are bound by these commands, those split hairs are pretty obvious to them.
Yeah.
Like they can probably see like the openings where they exist.
Yeah.
So it feels like one of those things where you'd have to be, you know, if this is an engagement you found yourself inside of at all, you'd have to be very careful all the time about how you went about asking.
Yeah. Well, this is also why, like, it seems like a lot of the house elves just like really like to do work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, maybe if you just, it seems like if you treat them well, they probably aren't looking for the loopholes, but obviously the Malfoys are pretty terrible.
It seems like in general, that's about the relationship that Creature had with Sirius's mother versus Sirius himself.
Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly.
That's the difference.
Exactly. But so there's immediately, they try and throw you off the scent of like Dobby's warning, with Fred and George just trying to be like, oh, it's probably just someone joking around with you. Anyone who hates you? Like,
yes,
you know.
Which I also found to be very interesting, because they're basically like coming up with exactly the right answer. It's like literally with one guess, they correctly land on the Malfoys being the potential owner of Dobby.
Of Dobby, and which it's like the Malfoys did not send Dobby, and like Draco had nothing to do with it, but he does belong to Draco.
Yes, exactly. So it's like, it's amazing that they're right for the wrong reasons
in
this particular case.
But then they say, this is interesting. So there's a very interesting line here too, where Harry says, Draco Malfoy, he hates me. And George turns around and says, Draco Malfoy, not Lucius Malfoy's son. Which to me is interesting, because it means that like in Fred and George, like in throughout Harry's first year, Fred and George took zero notice of Draco at all. They're like, who? Never heard of him.
Right. Yes. And this is another one where I feel like we see, I think, do we eventually see it be the case that Ginny is dating like Dean Thomas, and Fred and George ask, like, are you or are you not going out with a boy called Dean Thomas?
Yeah.
And it's like one of those things where it's like, surely you know Dean.
Right.
Like, there are, you know, between your ages at present, you're talking about a grand total of like probably 15 to 20 boys. Like,
right.
That is not too many boys to where you've never crossed paths in the dormitory.
I know. Like, they're 1 year below you. Like, certainly you know who Dean is. Or maybe not. Whenever I've read that line, I always think they're like, I've always read that as if they were like phrasing it in a comical way, like specifically like, are you like, I don't know, like if they were asking, like if it was Harry or something, like if they were asking Ginny about that, be like, are you or are you not dating a boy named Harry Potter?
That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe like, it's the inflection.
Right. Maybe it's the inflection. Like as if we don't know, we've never heard of him.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So I don't know, but yeah, it is interesting. There's also that. And then even in the DA, I think, like, again, with Ginny, when Ron finds out she's dating Michael Corner, he's like, which one was he? And it's like, dude, you don't even know everyone in the DA. Like, he's there.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. You would definitely know who this particular person is.
Yeah, you're in a pretty small group there.
In short supply.
But yep. Harry's response is, must be. It's not a very common name, is it? And, which I just wrote, like, how would you know? How do you know Malfoy's not a common name?
It could be. It could be.
It could be a common name. You just know the one. How many kids do you know?
Right, but either way, they immediately narrow in on him. They also, we get our first reference to Lucius, either which way, which I also just think is kind of interesting. That's because Lucius is, his name coming up so early is good setup for the fact that, like, we will see him again at the bookstore and then again learn eventually that, like, the diary was planted, you know, by,
like,
him.
Like, most of the plot is put in motion by him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think the early inclusion is no mistake. This is sort of like us getting that first little, like, hey, we're preparing you for this to be a character.
Yeah, for the other characters in the story. The same thing is going to happen with Lockhart later in this chapter.
You're exactly correct.
As well.
Yep definitely.
Then there's also Fred and George saying Lucius Malfoy came back saying he never meant any of it, load of dung. Dad reckons he was right in you know who's inner circle, and it's just like spot on.
Yep, 100%.
Totally.
Yep.
Get that. They also mentioned the ghoul in the attic here for the first time, I think.
Yep. Okay.
Which is just sort of like good setup for later on when they pretend to do the Spattergroit thing in book 7. There's also, this is a weird line I thought. It said, yeah, mom's always wishing you had a house elf to do the ironing. I was just like, what? Like, you can't iron by magic, right?
It also, this is another one of those instances as well where it's like, it seems like the one exception to tasks that house elves can do is like anything to do with laundry, because that wouldn't that be presenting them with.
Right, yes. With, like, with also, clothing. Also, yeah, specifically something house elves shouldn't be doing.
Right. Yeah. Unless that, like, line is like, unless the presentation, and it's hard to say because obviously, like, Lucius doesn't intend to give Dobby the sock.
Right. Yeah. He just sort of, he doesn't even, like, hand it to him as, like, hold this. He just, like, the fact that he was holding it and then Dobby is holding it is enough.
It's amazing that any house elf relationships have stayed intact for any amount of time at all, because it just seems like there would be so many instances where something would just cause it to, like, the relationship to be, like, broken.
Yeah. It's, like, it just seems like, yeah. Like, especially because when I think of the chores at my house, like, laundry is, like top of the list.
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing? Especially because they can do magic. Like, again, the ironing of the pants. Like, there's no way you can't magically iron something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, especially with Mrs. Weasley, who in this chapter will do, like, household, like, nonverbal household magic.
Yes. Yes, know? Indeed. Yes. We know that she's definitely pretty capable with that. So, anyway, but yeah, so then let's see, as we then move forward, yeah, we get the reference to Hermes, which I think is that a setup at all? There we go. Yeah, when he was made a prefect, that's another one of those things where we know that, like, the Weasleys do sort of have, like, this special occasion inside of the family where if you make prefect status, that sort of comes with the presentation of, like, a gift of sorts.
And then they also, the next line is, but Percy wouldn't lend him to me, said Ron, said he needed him. Percy's been acting very oddly this summer, said George, frowning. And this to me is, like, this is the first line in the book where they're trying to set you, the reader, up to think of Percy as, like, the red herring, or, well, it's the first time they're setting you up for Percy to suspect Percy.
Yes,
later on.
You're exactly correct. Yep. And that's you know, it's funny because I literally like, part of me wrote down, like, a little scribble note here, because we do have a theory about Percy that upon his graduation from Hogwarts school that he basically is under the Imperius curse for quite a period of time. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, part of, like, what has got him, like, marching to the tune of, like, the ministry's
drum
so aggressively. But you're definitely correct. Like, this is like one of those things where we know that throughout the book, Percy's going to continuously show up in sort of, like, unusual circumstances or places, or he's like somewhere maybe that he's not supposed to be, or, you know, is being secretive with Ginny, or Ginny knows a secret about him that he's, like, that, you know, isn't meant to be shared, and you know, there's all these things, and obviously what we'll know as the story unfolds is that Percy has a girlfriend,
right? Which one means that he's already dating Penelope, which is you know, kind of cool, I guess.
And of course, so the actual reason why he's acting very oddly this summer is because he's probably corresponding with his girlfriend.
Yeah, that's exactly who he's sending all the letters to. Yeah. It's interesting that he's, like, so secretive about this piece of information, though. Like, like, why are you so ashamed of having a girlfriend?
I don't know. Yeah, this does seem like a strange one, especially because, like, if anything, it seems like something that, like, your family would be, like, excited for you or impressed by. Or
I know. Well, like, I mean, I think at the end when Ginny finally tells Fred and George, they're, like, so happy. Like, Christmas came early. Oh, my God. Percy has a girlfriend. We're going to, like, make fun of him? Like, for what? Yeah. For what?
Is this a make
for
fun
what? Of- I don't get it. Also, it seems weird to me that he's so secretive about it and is in Gryffindor, because, you know, it just seems like the sort of thing you'd have the courage to wear proudly.
Maybe so. Maybe you so. Know? I'm trying to go back in my mind and, like, to high school versions of us and try to figure out whether or not, like, any amount of entering into those first, you know, early relationships was something that, like, one of us would have kept secret.
I mean, I guess there is. When I think about it like that, I suppose there is. Like, it's not like I came home and was like, guess what, Mom?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Or, like, you know, it feels like the type of thing the first time you would, like, bring it up at the table and be like, oh, yeah, I started dating so-and-so. Like someone's spoon would drop. I'm like, wait, what?
Did
you just say girlfriend?
I know. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe there's something to it. Yeah, but yeah, maybe ashamed is the wrong word. Just sort of like, yeah, it's just new
private,
for him.
Private.
Yeah. That's the right. Well, that's the word.
We'll lay off Percy.
There you go.
You enjoy.
There'll be plenty to complain about later.
Yeah, you enjoy your privacy for now.
Yes. okay. So here we go. Now we get to start. They start talking about Arthur's job at the Ministry. He works in the most boring department, said Ron. The misuse of Muggle artifacts office. Right. Okay. So, and it says it's all to do with bewitching things that are Muggle made. You know, in case they end up back in a Muggle shop or house, which, like, to me, this is a very interesting, like, what counts as this? Because, like, broomsticks are Muggle-made, right? Like, they're bewitched to fly, you know?
Do you think the broomsticks that they fly in Quidditch are, like, Muggle broomsticks?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that is kind of the question. I'm like, if Muggles invented brooms and then wizards were like, we could fly on those, and they enchanted them to fly, would that not then be, like, exactly this, bewitching things that are Muggle-made?
I guess so, but I have always sort of assumed that all of the wizarding broomsticks are specifically made by wizards and enchanted. And I think we've even made a video once upon a time that talked about whether or not broomsticks have cores.
Yeah.
To which I think the ultimate argument that we made is that they do, or that they would. Because
We did make that argument. Yeah.
Yeah. What I come back to with it is that, like, they say, like, with a wand, for example, like, you could technically channel your magic through any object, you know.
Yeah.
So you could hold up a rubber chicken and, you know, if you were to cast Lumos, like, you know, if you were a super powerful wizard, you might get, like, a faint light to come out of the end of it.
Right.
And then if you were to give them, like a stick matching their own wand would, it's like, maybe it would be even
a little bit better still.
Then if it was the right length, it would be a little bit better still. But, like, nothing's going to be better until you add that magical component to the center of it. So in my mind, it's almost like, could you, you know, a la Hocus Pocus, fly like a vacuum cleaner, you
right,
know, or something
yeah.
like that in the same capacity? And it's like, probably, but not well. So it's like, you need to do something to it to make it inherently.
No doubt, like, Quidditch brooms and wizard brooms are better. But I guess it does bring, like, a weird question. Like, are brooms innately, is it like, could a wizard go pick up, like, a Muggle broom and, like, fly on it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the big question.
Yeah.
It's like, in my mind, it's like, I would say it feels like the kind of thing where it would be like maybe the equivalent of, like, jumping off of like a high place with, like, an umbrella, you know, where it's like, you want to Mary Poppins and, like, gently glide to the ground.
It won't work.
It's like, I would be willing to bet that if you could get, like, all the proper scientific testing materials, the umbrella is slowing your fall some, but not enough to safely make you, like, land on the ground. You know, like it has more wind resistance than if you jumped without it. You know, so in my mind, I feel like that would be like how like a broomstick might be. It's like, you're never going to get, like, fly up and play a game of Quidditch.
Oh yeah. No.
On like a plastic broom from Walmart.
Right. Exactly.
But, could you technically maybe get it to levitate more than nothing? Maybe
because that's the question, because, like, it other, like, brooms are almost certainly a Muggle invention. And so if they can fly, if no matter what, any broom at all could be flown by any wizard, then it is not a matter of bewitching magical objects, just that brooms are innately magical.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So I feel like the fact that brooms don't fall under, or maybe obviously just because of wizarding culture, brooms don't, because they're just like, yeah, we know about broomsticks. Like, this is just a normal thing for our culture. Yeah, yeah. But there's other things in this very chapter, like radios. Do they not, like, do you think the radio they have is, like, magically enchanted in any way?
Oh, that's a good question.
Right? Because certainly that's a Muggle artifact. Wizards didn't invent radios.
I have a counterpoint to you that I think could be kind of interesting for this exact discussion.
Okay.
Which is that the very thing that the ultimate irony for him to work at this particular misuse of Muggle artifacts office, and the fact that it has to do with bewitching things that are Muggle made, like, is that what they drove was a flying car that was a Muggle artifact that was bewitched by Arthur himself. And
yeah.
Fred and George point out, it says if he raided our house, he'd have to put himself under arrest. But Arthur's ability to make the car fly is strictly magical.
Yeah.
Like, he has not done anything to it that has anything to do with, like aeronautical engineering.
Yeah.
Because we also know later in the story, his deepest ambition is to learn how airplanes stay in the air.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't know how it happens.
Right. Despite the fact that he has literally created a flying vehicle.
Right. He has done nothing to do with the physics or aerodynamics of flight to the car. He has done nothing but magic to the car.
Yes, exactly. So he has like an incantation, a levitation spell placed upon the vehicle that allows it to fly, which achieves the same function as what an airplane is providing for Muggle people.
Right.
So when he wants to know how an airplane flies, like stays in the air, it's like what he wants to know is the actual Muggle engineering that allows for like the aerodynamics to like work.
Right.
Like how is this actually happening? Which, if you were to take that piece of logic and apply it back to your radio question, it would almost suggest to me that wizard radios are not using like traditional radio waves.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Like, they
can't
like,
be.
They can't be. Like they have to be using some type of like magical transmission of spoken word.
Right. That is exactly how I feel like it works as well. Because the other thing, well, maybe this is now I'm going to run into a weird thing. So we mentioned earlier that none of the students at Hogwarts ever have like a radio to listen to the Quidditch matches or whatever or anything. And it occurred to me as I was saying that, well, they say like technology doesn't work at Hogwarts because there's like too much magic in the air.
Sure.
So like maybe that could be part of it. But if they're wizard radios and they are not powered by like broadcast waves, they're just like magically connected to one another, that doesn't seem like it'd be a problem.
That's
right?
True as well.
In which case, then it's just weird that no one has a radio again. Which I guess is just plausible that they just don't have one. But there's more, Ben. Like, what about the clocks at the Weasleys? Certainly clocks are Muggle inventions, right?
Well, but again, like, you know, the thing that we know this particular clock to do are things that are not typical of clocks. They're not necessarily like telling the time. They're telling like tasks or locations. So again, it's like I don't know if they have like your classic in fact, I would argue they don't have your classic like gears and
Maybe I mean, you're right, they're not telling time. They're more it's calling them a clock is almost just like, maybe you're right. So like, it's not really a clock. It's like you call it a clock because it looks like a clock, but it's really more like a reference of sorts.
Yes, like you're right. Like it seems like if you were to get into like an actual airplane, there's a whole bunch of instruments, all of which share the same like shape and have needles in the same way that like a clock has like pointing hands and stuff like that. But there, it's like, you know, your gas gauge in your vehicle is not telling you the speed of the car, nor is it telling you the time of day.
Sure.
So, like different objects in that regard. But you're right. We are still calling them clocks.
They're still calling them clocks. And there's like a weird thing here too, where Harry mentions one clock, but it's like the Weasleys actually have two very unique magical clocks.
They do indeed.
They do.
This is another thing where I thought for sure the clock that he saw in this chapter was going to be the clock, like the mortal peril.
The mortal peril clock.
The dentist. Like,
where are they? Yeah.
Yeah, like all those types of things. But it's not that one. This is more like when to do other like household, like time to feed the chickens, you're late. Which the you're late feels, I don't know. Yeah.
It's more like a calendar clock or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's more like a calendar clock. So, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, misuse of Muggle artifacts.
Okay, so here's the other thing. Apparently, Arthur would be in trouble for having bewitching this car to do things. But later on, Harry gets picked up by cars from the Ministry that are also magically enhanced.
This is also
right.
True. This is also
are those
true.
Not illegal cars?
Well, I mean, they
because you know what, Arthur enchanted them, but didn't intend to use them. These the ones by the Ministry are enchanted and obviously intended for use because they're using them.
It seems to me though that the things, the way that Arthur spends his time is not necessarily just the modification of a Muggle object, hard stop. It's more the modification and then the the implantation. Yeah,
with like malicious intent or
exactly.
Something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like this is like one of those things where it's like it only really becomes a crime if what you have done has then gone and like harmed Muggles.
Right.
You know, sure. And that's like where you've got the squirting, like the teapot that went berserk and squirted boiling tea all over the place. Then one man ended up in the hospital with sugar tongs clamped to his nose.
Yeah.
Like, these are clearly instances where somebody did something, they made it to Muggles, and then they like wreaked havoc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we'll move on from that. I just think it's funny that this is apparently you're not supposed to like tamper with Muggle things, but there's like all sorts of examples of them doing it.
Yes.
In like completely acceptable legal ways. So maybe that's just the case.
Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pear Eyewear. Y'all, I am so excited for our upcoming Through the Griffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pear Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish. But that is really just the start, because from there you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped because like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good. And they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening, it's already passed. But like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing in. I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can. And it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think, honestly, kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code GRIFFIN for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code GRIFFIN.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah.
They also mentioned that Dad only works with one other person named an old warlock called Perkins, which Perkins is the one who gives them the tent, which they use in Deathly Hallows when they're doing the Horcrux hunt. But my real question here is like, what makes you a warlock versus a wizard? Like, what is the delineation?
I don't know. That was something I marked as well, and I was kind of curious. I was like, why?
Yeah.
What is like? I don't know if I don't know if I totally know like what the difference is. Is there like is a warlock somebody who is like who sits on the Wizengamot?
There is chief warlock of the Wizengamot. Yes.
Yeah. Like I wonder if like if an old warlock would almost be like this is somebody who had formerly been like a senator. But is now
right? Is it like esquire or something or doctor?
Like you earned
a degree and now you're like a warlock,
right? Like it's like a title that like references like a former position that you like held as
right, yeah maybe as that's
like
an it.
Important official. I think okay. that to me that's what it would say because like chief warlock would say that you were like the like chief senator
yeah.
in this particular case like you were yeah. the lead person
right.
of the okay. other elected officials.
So now he's just sort of like whatever his warlock days are behind him and now he's just working in this two-man office of the ministry.
Yes, yeah. He's all just right. his passion project.
Yeah, this is just what he does now. Yeah. Just Perkins between camping trips.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
There's also the notion where Arthur says he went on 9 raids last night, and it's like that to me is also kind of funny, where like, because I guess that to me means he showed up at like 9 different houses to like inspect their stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. But in the middle of the night? Like, why isn't this his job during, why, like, in the middle of the day?
Yeah, this is a good question. It says, Dad was working overtime for weeks. I guess that was in reference to the tea set that was once sold. So yeah, I don't know because it does seem like he must work nights, but it doesn't seem like you'd be able to go and just be like knocking on people's door at 3 in the morning and be like, hey, sorry to bother you guys. Do you have a teapot?
Right. Even the word raid makes it sound like, you know, I'm imagining like a SWAT team or something.
I know. Yeah.
Like Arthur Weasley is like, all right, here we go, Perkins. Right.
Yeah.
Break down the door.
Secret agent.
Surprise! We're here to look for Muggle things.
I know. It does seem like the most like super cool espionage while also like incredibly nerdy, goofy
right.
squadron of two people ever.
I know. Yeah. Right. His job just seems like your job. It sounds like so much easier to do during the day. It doesn't have to be done at night.
You're exactly right. I agree with that. Yeah. So I just have no idea. Maybe people just keep strange hours in the wizarding world.
I guess it's possible for sure.
Anyway, so as we continue to move along here, though, we learned that they are in a town called Ottery St. Catchpole,
mm-hmm.
Which is just like one of those, you know, bits of detail that I always feel like is a good one to remember for all future trivia endeavors.
I think there is a real town called Otterton.
Otterton, okay.
I think it is based on similar, and then I think near Otterton is a town called Chudley, which is spelled Chudleigh.
Okay, so it makes sense that
Ron is a fan of the Chudley Cannons.
The Chudley Cannons, okay. Yeah. The Chudley Cannons, boom, 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 boom. We are not pirates.
Wow. If you understood that reference, then please leave your favorite sports ball emoji in the comments.
There we go. That's exactly it. Let's see here. The other thing that I found to be kind of interesting, I'm gonna give one other piece of trivia. Because I know I've gotten it wrong in a J versus Ben before, but as they land, Fred says touchdown, and then Harry looks up and it says it looked as though it had once been a large stone pig pen. Which this is a question that I remember getting wrong in a J versus Ben once, and I was like, there is no way in the world that they referred to the Weasleys' house as a pig pen.
Yeah,
I was like, that seems so like offensive. Maybe.
I know. I'm like, maybe I just don't know what old pig pens looked like were they really like house sized in foundation or something?
Possibly, but when you read it in context, it seems to play a lot better. Like it seems a lot less like filthy or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's not like saying like, yeah, their house looks like a pig pen. Like that sounds like the type of thing like Draco would say. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, I thought you lived in a pig pen, Weasley. Like,
right.
You know, like very like some.
Like maybe he does say that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, well, crap. Now, Harry thought the exact same thing. Oh, man. Anyway, so the house apparently looked like it had been a large stone pig pen, but doesn't anymore because it has extra rooms added here and there until it's several stories high and super crooked looking. The thing that I found to be kind of interesting interesting. It's just simply the fact that it has a sign that like their home is named.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if this is something that might be more common, like, you know, for farm like properties in general. But like yeah. certainly like our house doesn't have a name.
Right. Yeah. I know what you mean. But then like, I wonder if it's like a wizarding like culture thing, because like when like Bill and Flora's house, it's like called Shell Cottage.
It is called Shell Cottage. Like
they have a name for where they live,
which I guess
and,
that
like
makes
Malfoy
sense.
Manor is kind of a name, even though it's really, you know, not creative or anything.
Yeah. And I don't hate that as an explanation, because I think that the mail system is so different, because you don't have a carrier that's going down streets. You know, like you would just be sending an owl to a known property.
Yeah.
So I could see that.
Maybe, yeah. Or like Grimald Place.
Right. Yeah.
Also just sort of a name. Is that a name place, or is the street like Grimald? Because it's like number 13. Is it number 13 Grimald Place?
Number 12.
Number 12. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
My bad.
How embarrassing. Wow. Did you think turquoise was purple? Wow.
Number 12 Grimald. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe it's just like a wizarding thing to have like your homes have a name.
Yeah. I'm starting to think that totally makes sense. And even I think in the case of number 12, it makes sense because the Muggles believe that there was an error made in the postal system or whatever.
Right.
So like it's not even like number 12 compared to like number 13 Grimald Place, another wizarding residence.
Right.
It's like the number 12 is almost part of like the iconic nature of
the house.
Of the house.
Because it was like built in the middle of a Muggle establishment.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
What's mildly ironic about it not being 13 though is that oftentimes like hotels don't have a number floor 13 just for basic superstition purposes.
Oh, that would have been great if it was the number 13.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was exactly. Like, oh yeah, yeah. For superstitious purposes, there's no reason we skip 13 on the street.
People assume it's unlucky or something, you know, and it's like, nah, but it's not. It's a safe haven.
Yes.
You
know? I also like the name, the borough, because like weasels live in burrows.
Yeah, you know? I know. That's a good one. Right. Yeah. I highlighted it too. That's a good one.
Also, I don't know why there are. It says there were 4 or 5. I guess Harry just couldn't be bothered to count for sure. chimneys perched on top of the red roof, and I'm like, why? Why do you have 5 chimneys?
I did not realize the fact that it says 4 or 5, because it doesn't seem hard to look at something and discern the difference between 4 and 5 of something.
4 or 5.
4.
It's like hard to say.
It's like 4, maybe 5.
Is it?
It's like we're looking at it right now.
You're there. Yeah. But also, why?
Why would you have so many chimneys? Possibly just because of the location and the fireplaces. But you wanted to have one, like what?
How many rooms in the house have a fireplace?
Well, if you don't have like central air or something, I don't know. Maybe it gets cold.
I guess.
Building fires.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like if you, I guess I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe every little room's got its own little tiny fireplace.
Maybe like, I would love it if every like bedroom in the house had a fireplace.
I love nothing.
Although then is it enough fireplaces for every room to have one? It seems like Ron's doesn't.
Yeah.
Because that would have been mentioned.
But you can sometimes share a fireplace based on the positioning. Like you could have like two fireplaces vent into the same chimney is what I mean.
I suppose that's true. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm extremely pro wood burning fireplaces.
Oh, so am I.
There's nothing cozier. So
there's not. It seems like a cozy thing. It's just that it's never mentioned that there are multiple fireplaces in the borough, even though they have 5 chimneys.
Sure enough.
Yeah.
Either which way. then as we trudge forward here, we get the line from Fred that says, "Now we'll go upstairs really quickly and wait for Mom to call for breakfast. Then Ron, you come downstairs, going, Mom, look who turned up in the middle of the night, and she'll be all pleased to see Harry. And no one ever even know we flew the car."
Oh yeah.
I was like, this is such a like child's version of a plan.
Oh, I know. I literally wrote down next to it just, oh yeah, good plan. That'll work. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. No other questions need to be asked whatsoever.
Yes. Then we get just one of the best descriptions ever of Mrs. Weasley was marching across the yard scattering chickens, and for a short, plump, kind-faced woman, it was remarkable how much she looked like a saber-toothed tiger.
Ah, said Fred.
She's on to us.
Oh, man.
And then I love their response. It's, "Morning, Mom," says George, in what he thought was a clearly jaunty, winning voice. Like, I can smooth this over. Don't worry.
No big deal. Yeah.
Well, she doesn't know. We can't assume anything. Give nothing away.
Blind optimism.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love that whole exchange. Fantastic. Then there's another line down here. It says, "You could do with taking a leaf out of Percy's book," which, 1, gross, but 2, that's more misdirection, I think. towards Percy, who hasn't even actually appeared yet.
No, he has not. Yep, not at all.
Yep.
Let's see. Then, of course, let's see. Sorry, lost my train of thinking.
I like the next slide when she talks. So she's just screaming at the twins and Ron. And then I love how she just turns to Harry. It's like, I'm very pleased to see you, Harry, dear. Come in, have some breakfast.
I know. This is a scene that I feel like plays exactly perfectly, exactly as it should in the film.
Yes.
It's like she's so clearly so upset with her kids. But then also it's like, oh, Harry, how are you?
Yes, like, right. Like, I'm not mad at you at all. I know you had nothing to do with this.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Right. Like, she's still extremely aware of Harry's situation. And she's not mad that he's there.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's just the methodology that they took, which, to be fair, Mrs. Weasley herself says, like, I don't know what you were thinking, like taking the car. Like, we ourselves were thinking about just going and getting him anyway. So it's like she has. Yeah, it's definitely not like the collection from the Dursleys hard stop like that. That is something she like fully would have signed off on. It's just the way they went about doing it.
Yeah. Well, I do. You know what? If it maybe sounds like a communication problem in the family. Like maybe if they just told Ron, you know what? If you don't hear from Harry by Friday, we're going to get him.
Exactly.
You know, your dad's going to bust down the door with Perkins.
Secret agent Perkins. He's back. When we go inside, though, we get to see that Mrs. Weasley is listening to on her wizarding wireless Celestina Warbeck, which was another one of those where I was like, I did not know that Celestina was introduced so early in this series.
I love Celestina Warbeck as this like recurring musician that Mrs. Weasley is a fan of.
Yes, exactly. In such a light way here too. So it's like, it's not even like a plot point, but it does continue to come up as we press forward with a cauldron of hot, strong love.
I know. Do you suppose that she's called a singing sorceress. So do you suppose she had some sort of degree as well for a warlock? Singing sorceress, or is it just sort of like, yeah, you can call any wizard a sorceress. We just normally say wizard.
I think that's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's how I would read that one.
Yep.
Let's see here. There is once again, I mean, Hagrid also had sausages when he collected Harry from the hut on the rock with the Dursleys.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about these wizarding sausages, but every single time that they're eating sausages in this book, I'm like, I could go for a sausage.
Because I feel like it's like a real sausage. It's not like a Kroger bought sausage that you microwaved up. It feels like that. Man, it sounds so tasty.
It does.
Also, I think it is no mistake at all that the word tipping is used for 8 or 9 sausages because I think it was the last chapter, Harry tips the soup can of vegetables onto Hedwig's cage and it's like, this is the exact opposite.
Yes, yeah. It is. No, yeah. I agree with you 100%. I caught the exact same thing. I was like, it's so interesting that they use that exact phrasing so back to back because basically this is Harry having, 8 or 9. I mean, I don't know the size of these sausages, but
I'm assuming big.
I know. I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Like definitely oversized. It seems like quite the feast he's about to have with his also 3 fried eggs.
3 fried eggs, absolutely. There's also the comparison between how Mrs. Weasley uses a frying pan versus Petunia, who, if you recall, swung it at Harry earlier in this very book.
Yep.
Petunia tries to just like assault Harry with the frying pan, and Mrs. Weasley is serving him 8 or 9 sausages from the frying pan. So I think that's another just interesting comparison there.
Yep.
We've had 2 frying pan mentions here and vastly different results.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
We also have the deliverance of Ginny into the conversation as she has come downstairs with no knowledge that the man that she will someday marry will be in the kitchen waiting for her.
Yeah, that's what I said. Oh, they get married.
I know. Yeah. That's so adorable.
Yeah.
But I love that. Ginny, said Ron in the undertone to Harry, my sister, she's been talking about you all summer. Once again, probably just making Ron feel terrible for the fact that his best friend won't seem to write him back for some reason.
I know, right? Let's see. Then we get... Oh, we skip Charm Your Own Cheese.
How could we have done it? Okay, wow. Let's go
so
back.
This is... Yeah, Harry's looking around the burrow, noticing the books, one of which is called Charm Your Own Cheese, which my note here was just, I so wish that charmed cheese was more of a recurring thing in these books. That would have been great. I just think it's such a funny thing. Like, what are you doing to the cheese? Like,
I know.
What magical... effect can you add to cheese?
Well, this is my favorite cheese personally is the it's aged in such a way that there's like little crystals inside of it.
Yes.
That kind of give it this like, I can't even call it a crunch, but it's like it's a texture. It's a texture. Yeah.
Well, okay. No, wait. Do you think when it says charm your own cheese, my initial read was that you already have cheese and now you are charming it.
Yeah, like to take the cheese. Okay, are you about to say this is muggle purchased cheese?
No, I'm not.
Is this a misuse of muggle artifacts?
No, cheese is not a muggle artifact. Okay. It's just food. Is the book saying that like here's a charm to create your own cheese?
I think some milk, charm
it into cheese.
That's my interpretation.
Oh no, I definitely like the idea that you've got cheese and you're like, well, Parmesan, prepare to taste like raspberries or something.
This is making me desperately on the coffee website wanting to carry
cheese.
Charm cheeses.
Oh my gosh, that would be, dude, we should talk to someone about carrying cheese, because right now what we're carrying, and I'm just going to hard stop into an ad here, is some wizarding candles.
Gasp.
What? As of this month, which is now February, actually as of the day this is coming out, it's my birthday.
Hey, happy birthday, Jay.
Thank you so much. How great. So fun. But we have our second candle of the year. Live now, which is called Love Potion for Valentine's Day.
Very exciting. Yes. So the Wizarding Candles, if you go to wizardingcandles.com, we have an entire year long for the year of 2024 subscription to candles, all of which will have their own unique sort of like styles and scents. And inside of each one is also a hidden charm that is unique to each candle. So
not cheese.
We
should have a cheese charm in one of them now that I think about it.
That would not be the worst. The charm cheese candle.
Yeah, the charm. Oh my God. That should just be a standalone product.
Yeah.
It smells like cheese.
It smells just like cheese.
I don't know if anyone wants that. You guys want my cheese candle?
We could do like a little play on the Lockhart. Like, it's just like magic. Like, it smells just like cheese.
It's just like cheese. Yeah. Charm your cheese.
But I promise you, at present, we don't have any cheese scented candles.
No,
but
we do
have
not.
Lots of other amazing scented candles, all of which, again, are going to be available at wizardingcandles.com.
Yes.
There is a subscription, or there is a discount if you sign up for the subscription.
Yes.
So that's kind of the pro tip for you. So link in all the descriptions and show notes and all that type of stuff if you'd like to go and check it out. We would do it. We would very much appreciate it.
All right, moving on in the chapter, we get first mention of Lockhart, where Mrs. Weasley instructs her sons to go denome the garden, and then I feel like it says, now let's see what Lockhart has to say on the subject, which to me, like, it's a good intro. It's just like trying to lay the foundation because you're going to meet Lockhart later in the book, but at the same time, it's like there's no way I don't think she needs this information.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree, and I also highlighted this particular title in particular because like we know that like Lockhart's whole shtick is that basically he goes and finds wizards who have accomplished great things, who are maybe like less storybook looking or are less looking for fame for their accomplishments. And so what he does is he like hears their stories and then he wipes their memory so that they no longer remember doing it. And then he claims that he did it and he has the whole story because he's interviewed the person who has done it, which brings me to my point that I'm trying to make here, which is that this particular title, Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests.
Yeah.
Who did he track down and whose memory did he erase for this book?
I was like, this is an odd addition to his like otherwise adventure tales. Like, you needed this on your discography there, Lockhart?
This is a little beneath his usual heroics.
I know. That to me, you're right. Because otherwise, if he just came up with it by himself, which is almost no chance he did, then good for you. That sounds like it probably sold pretty well. But probably what this means is that somewhere out there is just some friendly wizarding exterminator who has got his mind wiped so that Lockhart could steal Guide to Household Pest information from him.
Man, when you describe it like that, it truly is devastating.
I know.
It's just like someone who just spent their life learning the ways of denoming gardens.
And now
they're not even getting credit for all that hard work that they uncovered. Either which way, though, the boys don't really seem to take any of Lockhart's advice on it because they've probably just done this task before, as has Mrs. Weasley.
Yes.
Because this is like one of those things that I also love. This is jumping ahead one page, but we eventually learn that the gnomes tend to come back, and it's because who says it? it here. I think Ron, they love it here. Dad's too soft with them. He thinks they're funny. And I just wrote, I love Arthur. Like, he is just such a sweetheart all the time.
I know. Like, such a good guy.
He cares for everything and everyone and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I love also when Harry sees the garden and just says it's exactly what a garden should be. And it's just like all lumpy. And like, I love that it's exactly what a garden should be. And included in that is weeds. Like,
yes,
he's like,
yes.
Yep. Garden should have weeds. You got to get out there and get your hands dirty. There should be stuff growing just everywhere.
Yeah.
Every variety. Love that explanation. And then also, like, this is a chore, I guess, for the boys to go denim the garden. But honestly, it just sounds fun.
It kind of does. You know? It seems like they make a game out of it just literally instantly.
I know.
Yeah. So it says, yeah, like, I think this is Ron basically doing the procedure, where you take the gnome, above your head, you swing it in great circles like a lasso, and then just heave it off into the distance.
Woo!
Where Ron's first one goes 20 feet, to which Fred says, pitiful.
Yeah.
I bet I can get mine beyond that stump. And this is like growing up with our group of friends. Mm. This is 100% how every great memory we've ever had was formed.
Yeah.
It was basically like we had no plan of actually doing this particular thing. Then once we discovered that we could push the boundaries on it like a lot, we would and did. And that became like our whole personalities.
That was basically it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also just like the sentence a few lines later, just the air was soon thick with flying gnomes. like they're throwing so many so fast, there's barely a break in the action.
Right. Like you might think it's overcast, but nope, that's gnomes.
Those are gnomes. They are just, it is thick up there. It's fantastic. All right. If we turn the page, Mr. Weasley arrives home. He says he has 9 raids, one of which was Mundungus Fletcher tried to put a hex on me when I had my back turned, which is just our first introduction to Mundungus.
This is another one of those two, though, like where we know that Mrs. Weasley is never much a fan of Mundungus.
Yeah.
And kind of given this one sentence alone, probably has very good reason for her position towards him.
Yeah.
It's like, you tried to hex my husband once upon a time. Of course, I don't like you.
Yeah, I know, right? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Jeez. Let's see. I had a big line of text here. There's Mr. Weasley is explaining about the door keys, and he says, of course, it's very hard to convict anyone because no muggle would admit their keys keep shrinking. They'll insist they just keep losing it. Bless them. They'll go to any lengths to ignore magic, even if it's staring them in the face, which to me is like, does that mean you're telling them that magic is happening? And they're like, no, it's not magic. I just can't find it.
Right. Like, I know this is like one of those funny ones, though, where it's sort of like everybody has lost their keys.
Yes, you know, like it absolutely is.
So I do think it's really hilarious just to think that it's like, the reason everybody loses their keys is because they are magically like sort of modified to shrink so that you lose them. But but again, this is another one of those like Arthur Weasley, like just great person moments where he's just like, bless them. Like, oh, The poor things.
They come up with all these silly reasons. Magic's right in front of their face.
Yeah.
There we go.
The other irony of that particular situation is just simply the fact that hiding magic from muggles is like the number one chief objective of the entire wizarding
ministry,
government.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then he has to sit there and like even when they see it, they don't
believe it.
They don't believe it.
They just assume something else is happening.
Right.
Because why would you assume magic?
Right, because you don't even assume magic. So exactly. Nonetheless, apparently there is concern that they will have noticed a flying car. I guess that's too big. But I mean, one of just my... I remember this being the funniest line in the world when I was a kid.
Okay.
Is when Mrs. Weasley says, your sons flew that car to Harry's house and back last night, chatted Mrs. Weasley. What have you had to say about that? He goes, did you really? Did it go all right? He's just like, he's so happy. He so misreads the tone.
I know.
He's just like, oh, what? It flew?
I know. This is one of those moments where, like, as a kid, I remember hearing this sentence for the first time, and it was like a daydream of mine to have one of the instances where, like mom complaining to dad or dad complaining to mom, where the other parent basically responds with this exact candor.
Yeah.
You know, where it would sort of be like, the kids were playing in the mud all day. Were you really? Way to go, boys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's like one of those things where it's like nothing I wanted more was for one parent to think that I had done something like dastardly wrong while the other parent was like, good job. Right. Like, that's what I was shooting for.
I like
for.
How that's what you're going for. You want one to be mad and one to be proud, not both to be proud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if one's got to be mad, then I at least want the other one to be proud.
Right, I know. I'm surprised. Yeah, I could see it happening. Like, your kids were up in the trees building a fort today with hammers and saws. And be like, can you go in it? Let me see it, you know? Yeah,
tell me more.
Well, let's go.
How stable is it?
Yeah, can I come? I wanna you guys want to have a sleepover?
I want to play in the fort.
I know. Exactly.
That is exactly how it would go with me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so yeah, I'm sure that probably will happen. Yeah, you know, Addison's gonna come in one day and be like, "Dad, I built a fort." Mom's really mad and be like, "Why?"
Sounds so cool.
Sounds great. This is not. I highlighted this just because it was like it seemed like a fun little bit of trivia, but something I've always it mentions Ginny's eye color as bright brown eyes, which I don't know. I think because Harry is always described as having his mother's eyes, and Harry's eyes are green, and Ginny kind of also has the red hair like Lily. I think I always assumed her eyes were green, but clearly they're not.
Well, not so clearly they're not. So I'm kind of interested that you brought it up like that, because in the audiobook, which is reading from the original the original U.S. version, so Jim Dale reads the original U.S. version, Stephen Fry reads the original U.K. version, but it says green in the audiobook.
They changed it?
They changed it.
What?
Yeah. So I don't know if this is like one of those situations where it was like, you can't have Ginny be too much
like Lily.
Like Lily reincarnated. But wait a second. How old?
No. That'd be really weird. I can see where you're going.
The timing is odd.
What is her birthday?
She is a year younger than Harry, and Harry is a year
old when his mom dies.
That's kind of weird.
If Ginny's birthday is like November 1st or something, then it's really, really weird.
That is really weird. Man, that would be like a discovery happening live in motion. That I mean, would. Of course.
Someone would have connected those dots by now. Maybe.
Almost certainly.
But yes. Then it's sort of weird.
See if it says when Ginny's birthday
Let's
is.
Let's see. Do we know when is Ginny Weasley's birthday?
Sorry, guys. This is one of those moments where we have to
We're getting sidetracked. It's August 11th.
August 11th.
Yes.
Okay.
August 11th, 1981. So she would is be like born before
the attack.
Before the attack, yes, she's alive. Ooh, before the attack.
That was dangerously close.
Narrowly missed it.
I would have lost my
mind. But that would have been like, so weird if Harry was dating the reincarnated version of his mom.
It would be. It would be extremely strange.
Yeah.
But like the parallels between Ginny and Lily are uncanny.
Uncanny.
So. Anyway,
but they changed the eyes. Why did they change? That must be why they changed her eye color.
Like too much like
too
Lily.
Similar to Lily. Yeah. That's got to be the reason.
Yep.
Wow, it's a weird one. So in our book, it says bright brown. In the audio, it says green.
Yeah. Man, when you brought that up, I was like, oh, he caught the same thing as me. And then you didn't. And it was so different. And I was like, oh, this is so great. Okay, that's very interesting.
Okay. Yeah, and then let's see. Ron shows Harry his room. He's covered nearly every inch of the shabby wallpaper with posters of the same seven witches and wizards.
In addition to that, he's also got a... This is like one of the things that always stands out to me. But in addition, he's got like comic books called The Adventures of Martin Miggs, the Mad Muggle, which I think is a good trivia piece. Following that is Ron's wand lying on top of a fish tank full of frog spawn on the windowsill. So there is a frog pond on the Burrow's property.
Yes.
So almost certainly this is quite literally like frog eggs that will then hatch into tadpoles.
Yeah.
But the kind of hilarious thing from my perspective is that as a bit of a saltwater aquarium enthusiast, there is a coral that I keep in just about every saltwater aquarium I've ever set up called frog spawn.
Oh, that's funny.
So in my head, I always picture it like he's got,
like
a tank full of like euphilia, which is the scientific name for frog spawn.
Also right next to the frog spawn is his fat gray rat Scabbers, which is just like it, man, I don't know why, like it's always gross that Scabbers is Peter, but it's like the fact that he's just right there. He's right there.
I know.
There's a grown man in that room with them.
I know.
It's just like, oh, he's right there. And it's so gross. And it's, Peter sucks so much. I hate him.
Peter really is. He's like one of those characters where it's like there's a piece of me that can like find sympathy for so many characters, but I feel like Umbridge and Peter are two of the ones where it's just like, I can't even find like an edge to like a finger hold to try to give them some credit
on. Okay. So also speaking of going back to the Chudley Cannons for a second. One, it sounds like there are posters literally all over the wall. And when I was starting to think about this, I was trying to imagine being in a room the size of Ron's where every single piece of the wall was moving like if every picture on the wall was moving.
Oh my gosh.
I was just like, this sounds so overstimulating.
Yeah, having literally like, just gotten off a cruise last week where there can be something a little bit jarring about like feeling like you're standing on stable ground and then looking out at the horizon and like the ocean is moving past you.
Yeah.
It's like a very like unnerving feeling.
Yeah.
It feels like that's how this would be.
Yes. Okay. Also, he mentions that the Chudley Cannons are ninth in the league, which I assumed at first reading was out of nine.
It does feel that way.
Yeah. It does feel that way. And I think probably they do end up bottom of the league because Dumbledore at some point says, like, as sure as the Chudley Cannons will finish bottom of the league again. I don't know what book that's in, but it sounds like they're frequently towards the bottom. But actually, there are 12 teams in the league, which means at the moment, the Chudley Cannons are ninth out of 12, which is ninth, which is three quarters.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Nine, which is three quarters of the way.
Of 12, yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That was a good piece of...
Thank you.
Good piece of fun discovery there. That's always a good one. Yep. Basically, as we sort of like close out the chapter here, it almost feels as though the sending of the boys out into the yard to denome the garden was maybe something that Mrs. Weasley was mostly just doing to punish them for their evening adventure, because we can see that the gang of gnomes is just sneaking one by one back through the Weasley's hedge.
Like, so what an unsuccessful.
Like, yeah, it's like this didn't work at all. That or they should have read Lockhart's book.
I know. Yeah, maybe they didn't. We know how to denome a garden. It sounds like you don't.
Yeah.
Sounds like you don't. Or maybe Mr. Weasley's just too soft on them.
I know. Exactly that. And if Mr. Weasley's too soft on them, then it feels like Mrs. Weasley knows that the gnomes are just going to come back over.
Right. It's just like, this is just something to go do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we close out, there's just like last little brick of text on the last page. It says, it's a bit small, said Ron quickly. Not like that room you had with the muggles. And I'm right underneath the ghoul in the attic. He's always banging on the pipes and groaning. But Harry, grinning widely, said, this is the best house I've ever been in. And Ron's ears went pink.
I know. I just love that whole sentence.
It's just so great.
It's so good. I feel like I almost wish it didn't say Ron's ears went pink. It just said, this is the best house I've ever been in.
I know. I agree. I mean, because it could have just ended right there and just been like just like, such a great thing. And I just think it goes to show that like none of the Dursleys' quirks or ways of life or anything, like their whole perspective, none of it has worn off on Harry in any way.
Yeah,
like he doesn't appreciate anything about the way.
Yeah,
that
he's
they
not
do
like,
life.
Oh, shouldn't it be like that?
Right.
It's like everything is the complete opposite here, and by the complete opposite, it's 100% right.
I love it in every single way.
Yes.
So I do love that. And as I've gotten older, this is like one of the ones that always like kind of like emotionally gut punches me. It's just I think the way that Molly will continuously sort of like take a degree of like a position of like motherhood over Harry is it grows as like one of my favorite aspects of the whole story, is just the relationship between those people, that like these are such kind and caring and giving individuals that like they without a second of hesitation, despite the fact that they are like impoverished or you know poor as they are described as being, like it's nothing for them to take on someone else in the form of Harry.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I love
well
that.
Well said.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's just, it's this chapter in particular, that's what I wrote at the end, is it just like I said, I love this chapter so much. And I think it's because it's like, this is like the real true, like, I mean, we've seen Mrs. Weasley help Harry at the platform. Like we know that that's like been a thing so far. But this is like the real entry of like Harry kind of being like a surrogate son to the family.
So. You know, we theorized Dumbledore's big plan wise that like Mrs. Weasley calling out, what's the platform number, is like specifically to get Harry's attention.
Yes.
I mean, sort of the same thing. Do you suppose her bringing up, what does Lockhart have to say on the subject, fall into that same category? Like as a way, like she already knows Lockhart will be there or something. Like this is, let me tell you about Lockhart real quick, Harry. Or I don't know.
It seems possible.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem unlikely to me. Although it does feel as though, like Molly does have like a sort of,
crush
or a fascination with Lockhart in a way that's probably like a little bit of like a guilty pleasure or something.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit hard to tell with that particular one. But possibly. Unless the other piece there is that, again, it's just going back to this thought that she's like, I'm going to make you go do a senseless task as your punishment instead of going to go sleep. Because this does feel like one of those things where it's like, if surely if the kids had just woken up from their beds, they wouldn't have been asked to go and denome the garden.
Right. Yeah. Like sure.
Necessarily on this particular day.
Yeah. That's true.
So this could be, maybe it's just part of like the demeaning. It's like, I'm going to make you listen to someone else's method because I know you guys are going to go out there and make sport of this thing.
That's true. That could be the thing. But boy, speaking of Lockhart, and I won't comment on it right now, but oh my God, the chapter art for the next chapter.
Oh my God.
Not going to say anything, but wow, can't wait to talk about it.
Oh, that was going
to
be so much fun. So yeah, that'll close out chapter three, The Burrow from Chamber of Secrets. We are now looking ahead to chapter four at Flourish and Blotz.
Yes, should be lots of fun. A lot of stuff happens in the next chapter. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening to today's episode and for subscribing. If you're watching on YouTube, if you want to click that subscribe button, it's like a little happy birthday present for me. That would be amazing.
There we go.
We're up to 24,000 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you guys so much. That is like so cool. That's it. We're just, you know, one step closer to our goal of that silver play button.
I know, it's going
to
be so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
We're almost at 25. That'd be a quarter of the way there.
How about that?
Then we'll only have 3/4 of the way to go.
We love 3/4.
We sure do. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. But otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.